Welcome to an inspirational Sunday message from Found Church. We hope you will be challenged and encouraged while listening to this message. For more information, or if you'd like to contact us, please visit our church website, foundchurch.co.uk, or you can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Daniel chapter 3. We're continuing our studies in the book of Daniel. How to live for God in challenging times. Daniel in chapter 3. And it says in verse 1, King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold 90 feet high and 9 feet wide and set it up on the plain of Jura in the province of Babylon. He then summoned the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials to come to the dedication of the image he had set up. So the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials assembled for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before it. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, "This is what you are commanded to do, O peoples, nations, and men of every language. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace." Therefore, as soon as they heard the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, and all kinds of music, all the peoples, nations, and men of every language fell down and worshipped the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. At this time, some astrologers came forward and denounced the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. You've issued a decree, O king, that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music must fall down and worship the image of gold, and that whoever does not fall down and worship will be thrown into a blazing furnace. But there are some Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who pay no attention to you, O king. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you have set up." Amen, and may God bless the reading of his word. My kind of thought today could be captured in a title that, "Take a stand now so that when the heat is put on, you'll not bow." So just that thought in our lives about the importance of taking a stand. This whole passage, and we're only looking at part of it today, is one of the most well-loved passages in the whole of the Bible. And I'm sure we all remember Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We seem to remember their Babylonian names more than we remember their Hebrew names. But great things happened in their life that we're going to unpack in this particular story. We don't know how much time has elapsed since a week's passed since the message that Stephen shared last week, but we don't know how much actual time has passed from the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had and this event actually taking place. Some people actually think it might have taken as long as 20 years. And some people actually believe that when this happened, it was around the time of the fall of Jerusalem. So our story is about the challenge to bow to an image and the response of these three guys. And we read about this image in verse 1. And if you are just trying to get a kind of picture of what this image might actually look like in your mind, how many of you have been to London? Have you been to Trafalgar Square and seen Nelson's Column? Yes. Well, if you were to compare it with Nelson's Column, this particular statue here was 90 feet high by 9 feet wide. And Nelson's Column, which was obviously commemorating Britain's or England's greatest heroes, naval heroes. He won the Battle of Trafalgar. He died at the Battle of Trafalgar, didn't lose any ships, but destroyed about 20 of the French and Spanish combined ships. And so they built this statue to commemorate that. And the statue at the top, the Nelson part at the top, that part is 18 feet. And so this statue is 5 times higher than the actual Nelson bit at the top. 5 times higher than that. But the plinth that Nelson's Column stands on would be almost 2 times, 1.87 times higher than the the image that was set up. And so I'd maybe give you a little bit of a context. The whole thing is about twice the size, but the size of actually the statue that was put up here is actually five times bigger than the bit at the top with Nelson. And not only that, but it's made of gold. Now, we don't know if it was made of wood overlaid with gold or if it was made of pure gold, but whatever way it was huge. Nelson's column, I did a little bit of digging into it. It's sculpted of sandstone and the top of a fluted granite column, and it's capped by bronze sculptural elements that were actually made and cast from melted wreckage of an 18th century British warship. So, but this is not made of any of that kind of stuff. It's gold. It's at least overlaid with gold. And we don't actually know what it looked like. There are pictures and children's books try and show you what it actually looked like. But it could have been of the king himself. It could have been of some Babylonian deity. It could have stood for the spirit of Babylon. I read an interesting book, it was either last year or the year before, called The Return of the Gods, which basically said that the old evil spirits that never actually went away, they've just actually reappeared in a different form, which is actually very interesting. And some people think that because of the head of gold, when as Stephen told us last week, when Nebuchadnezzar had the dream and he says, "You, O king, are that head of gold," that he maybe was projecting himself onto this. It certainly has a pride element about it. They would all agree with that. And Nebuchadnezzar maybe was a bit afraid that because the statue at the bottom was mixed of iron and clay and it wasn't enduring, that he was going to try and do something that was going to make his kingdom enduring, his empire enduring. But it was an awesome sight. Some think it might have been actually 6 miles from Babylon where it was actually set up. And so they come to the dedication of this massive statue that the king has set up, overlaid at least with gold, and he summons all who is who's who in officialdom in his country to come, and they've all got to bow down as well. So you've got a list in Daniel 2 to 3 that we read earlier of all the names of the people at that particular time. I don't need to go into what their equivalents are today. Some of them are pretty much the same, but it was all who's who of the government officials were there. They all came. Well, who wouldn't? If you lived under that regime, I doubt whether you wouldn't come either. I think we'd all come. It's a bit today, like I remember last year we had the privilege of visiting Budapest. And we went to the museum that tells you all about the history. And told you a bit about the occupation under the Nazi regime and under the communist Russia. And it was horrendous. And you did not want to stick out like a sore thumb there, or you were incarcerated. It was a totally different scenario. And it reminded me of a story I heard many years ago. And if I wasn't doing it online here, if I was telling you privately, maybe you would try and mock an Eastern European kind of accent, like, you know. But I wouldn't do it here. I'll probably get sued, so I wouldn't do it. But you know, so that you can imagine that kind of scenario. And the communists are saying, you know, since communism took over, it says, we have now 5 million tons of harvest this year. Communism is really working. And this guy put up his hand, and the lad said, who was leading the meeting, says, so what's your question? He says, my name is Boris. And he says, I want to know where the wheat has gone. And they said, shut up. You're not allowed to ask questions like that. Be quiet. Sit in your seat. So the next year happened, and they were again lauding the benefits of communism. 10 million tons this year. And this guy puts up his hand, and the guy said, yes, what can I help you? He says, yes, he says, my name is Boris, and I want to know where the wheat is gone. And the guy told him to sit down, be quiet, he's not allowed to speak. So the next year, they're lauding it again, and this year it's 20 million tons of wheat. And same thing, this guy puts up his hand, and the official who's conducting the meeting says, yes, I know. He says, you are Boris, and you want to know where the wheat has gone. He says, no, my name's Victor, and I want to know where Boris has gone. And I actually think that probably sums up how it would have felt in that particular time. So there's this proclamation that as soon as they hear all the musical instruments, They have to bow down. And the commentators make the point that this was more than a political assembly. It was a religious service. It called for total commitment. And it's worth noting that the word worship is used 11 times in this chapter. So it's an act of worship. And Nebuchadnezzar's attempt to impose a uniform system of belief on his subjects was by bowing down to this. And the Roman Caesars would do exactly the same. And let me just say that I believe some of the laws that are being passed in our country and in the EU and worldwide have got something of the same kind of flavor, that they want everybody to bow to similar things. And as an army man, that he himself would have wanted obedience to this as well. And so the intimidation is there. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace. So it's severe. It's bow or burn. I've heard people say that they preached a sermon and it was turn or burn. But so repent or that. But this here, it's bow or burn. If they do not bow to this, they're going to be put into a blazing furnace. And the interesting thing is that Nebuchadnezzar, when we saw last week how he was changed because of the dream, he's reverting back to his old nature. It's strange. So when he got that dream, remember, he wanted to know what it meant, and Stephen expounded to us what it meant. Now this guy's reverting back to old type. He now thinks he's the big cheese. Before that, he'd said, surely your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and the revealer of mysteries. He's made that declaration from his own mouth, and where is he now? He's back to his old behavior. He thinks he's the big cheese. And, you know, it's always been a mystery to me how people can encounter God in a powerful way, and God can do something in their life, and then suddenly they're back to their old ways again. And there's a verse that I'm reminded of in Isaiah 63:18. For a little while you people possess the holy place, but now our enemies have trampled down the sanctuary. And for some it's only a little while. And the parable of the sower, it probably shows us that. So he's sadly been sucked into his old lifestyle. And then you see this devotion and adulation. It says, all the peoples, nations, and everyone bowed down. The superstitious crowd was accustomed to worshiping idols. You know, there's a lot of superstition around, even to this particular day. And they're all bowing down, especially in light of the consequences. Who wouldn't? Who wants to be Boris in that kind of situation? And what about the Hebrew lads? What will they do? What will Daniel and his friends do? Will they bow? Well, being Jewish by nature, they were aware of the commandments, the Ten Commandments, which begins that God spoke all these words, saying, I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. And it goes on to speak about not making idols and then not bowing down to them and serving them. And so the Bible's quite clear against idolatry. And so what will they do in this particular situation? I mean, they're not at home. Away from home, people don't know you, don't know what's going on. At that particular time, of course, God always sees what's going on. And these young Jewish civil servants have to make a decision. Are they going to bow? Are they going to show loyalty? Or are they not going to bow? And it's my personal opinion that this happens to us far more often than we think about. I've made reference to laws, but you just need to work nowadays and there'll be challenges at your work. You just need to go to school, and you'll be challenged in your school as to whether you're going to stand up for what you believe or not. Or are you going to, if they're going to lead you down a pathway that's not full of integrity and honesty before God, then what are you going to do? Are you going to go with the flow, or are you going to take a stand? And in my life, I the jobs that I've had, I worked in the swimming pool in Rose Hartley when I was a kid, in relief. I as a young guy, I then worked in a clothes shop for my summer holidays. I then worked in a bank. I worked in industry, and now I've been in ministry here for 35 years. I also did part-time jobs. I drove coaches and drove taxis for a while. And so I've had a little bit of life experience in different things, and I've been I've been at the coalface where pressure has been put on me and many of these jobs to do things that were not right. And I've also sat at the other side of the fence where people have actually sat down and asked for my advice and talked through some of the challenges that they've had to face. And there's continual intimidation and pressure to bow to cultural norms, to idolatry, to sinful practices, and to selfish ambition. Every single week, I get updates through my inbox from different organizations that represents Christians, that takes a stand for Christian things. The Christian Institute, Coalition for Marriage, Citizen Go, CARE, the Evangelical Alliance. And every week, they are highlighting challenges that people are facing in our country at this moment in time and overseas for taking a stand for some of these things. People have been pushed down roads that they're not happy with going down. Some of these, like the Christian Institute, even have a fund. And we've given into that fund in our missions offering to help people that are persecuted because of their belief. I also get monthly and bi-monthly updates from the persecuted church. And there are people today that are being pressurized to do stuff or who, when they become Christians, they are disenfranchised, they lose their jobs, they lose their inheritance, chucked out from their family and stuff like that. There's people paying a high price at this moment in time. So don't just think this is something, it happened thousands of years ago. This is a current issue, and that's why we're looking at it. Will Daniel's friends crumble and simply fit in? Will we? And I believe there's a wider application about what we bow to in society and what we bow down to in our personal lives. Because the Bible tells us to flee from idolatry. Galatians 5 tells us idolatry and witchcraft is wrong. It's part of the old sinful nature. When I did Latin at school, I had a brilliant Latin teacher. There's a lot of stories I could tell about her, but she was brilliant in many ways. And told us about the Roman setup, and it stayed with me all my days. So Romans had gods, as had the Greeks, for the different things that you did in your life. So if you were wanting to be successful in love, you would go and make an offering to the idol of love. If you were the goddess of love, if it was war, you would be the god of war. If you're planting crops, it would be stuff like that. That kind of idolatrous situation. So why does it say that it can have a meaning for us today? Well, the Romans actually took it to another degree. And there's a bit of that here in this particular chapter. When the persecution of the Christians took place, and they would make Christians come and put a pinch of incense before the emperor and bow before the emperor and acknowledge that he, Caesar, was Lord. And of course, a Christian's not going to acknowledge that Caesar is Lord. And so they were thrown to the lions, they were put into the Colosseum and made to fight and all of these kind of things. Nero was particularly horrific, and it would be not appropriate to share some of the things that he did. And so this has gone on through the ages, and now it might be idolatry in relation to our possessions. What are idols in our particular lives? What are we bowing down to? And you know, when God's spoken, then we've got to follow through what God says. And they could have easy reason through in their mind. Hey, this is only symbolic. It's only once. They could have said everybody else is doing it. Our office demands that we obey. We'll bow our knees, but we won't bow our hearts. We can do our people more good by being officers in the king's service than by being ashes in the king's furnace. They could have gone through that. But true faith actually doesn't look for loopholes. It obeys God, doesn't it? That's what we're called to do. And so to bow before the image, even once, would have been compromising what they actually believed. And faith means obeying God regardless of our feelings, regardless of the circumstances round about us, or regardless of the consequences that are set before us. And so they did not bow. They did not bow. We all bow to something. We should be bowing to God. But they did not bow. And the rivals were quick to point out what was going on. And by doing that, they were actually inviting the death sentence upon them. Now, it says, verse 12, they ignore. And then it says, they neither serve your gods nor worship the image. What a testimony. What a testimony these three guys had. And these people that are blaming them and they probably benefited from Daniel's interpretation of the dream. Maybe they felt a bit miffed that they weren't the ones that interpreted the dream. So we don't know all that's going on in their lives. But how many of you remember Keith Green, the musician? A few, yeah. Well, he had an LP. We had Diana the LP, and there's this picture of the guys, and everybody's bowing down and they're standing up like, and it could have been like that. The event could have happened over several days. They maybe were looking to see if these guys were. Because people look, they watch us all the time over Christians. They're looking, will they give into that? Will they say this? Will they do that? Will they do that? And these guys refused to bow. It's amazing. It's what they did. You can imagine the pressure that they were under at that particular time. And yet they refused to do it. So that's what happened then. What does that mean for us today? You know, I want to say three brief things to drive this home to us today. I've gone through this pretty quickly, but the three guys did not bow. I want to say today, this was not the first time that they'd taken such a stand. Because remember in chapter 1, when they were captured and they were told to eat the food and drink the wine from the king's table, food and wine that had been offered up to the Babylonian deities, they said they did not want to do it. I like what it says in the Authorized Version. It says, Daniel purposed in his heart not to defile himself with the food that he offered from the king's table. He purposed in his heart. I like that. Purposed in his heart. Resolved, says another translation. And determined, says another translation. And you might recall that they were to eat all these food and vegetables that was put in front of them that were offered to the idols, and they said no. And the guy who was looking after them says, my life's basic, I'm paraphrasing now, my life's not worth it if I let you do this. And Daniel said, test us for 10 days. And so see what it's like. See how we are. And so he allowed that to happen. God gave him favor. And then at the end of the period of time, the Bible says that there's nobody had wisdom like these guys. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego went along with Daniel in that. Because the Bible tells us that in Daniel chapter 1, that these three guys were part of it. So it's not the first time that they have said no to these things. So they already showed their faith. And they've already showed their loyalty. And they realize it takes more than a king's command to make true servants of God sin against their convictions. They're living now a new normal, cutting a new groove that even a death threat would not overturn. So they've made a decision. They've made a decision, and we're going to follow God. And the second thing I want to say today is, each time we say yes to God and no to temptation, we become stronger. Exley says, each act of spiritual obedience, no matter how small, reinforces the foundation of a person's spiritual character. Day by day, he is strengthened with might through God's Spirit in the inner man. When a potentially overwhelming temptation arises, he is prepared. For having been obedient in the face of seemingly insignificant temptations, he is now able to be obedient in the moment of crisis. Some of you might remember an old hymn, Yield Not to Temptation. Any of you remember that hymn? Yield Not. There's a few. Yeah. For yielding is sin. And it goes on to say, each victory will help you, some other to win. That's truth. Each victory will help you, some other to win. Somebody said this, the devil tempts us to destroy our faith, but God tests us to develop our faith, because a faith that can't be tested can't be trusted. I like that. That's very good. So this thought about each victory will help us. You know, it takes courage to say no. It takes courage to swim against the tide, to go against the flow. It takes courage to do that. But this is what Romans 6 tells us. Whatever we give into becomes our master. I love what it says in the Message translation. That means you must not give sin a vote in the way you conduct your lives. Don't give it the time of day. Don't even run little errands that are corrected with that old way of life. Throw yourselves wholeheartedly and full time. Remember, you've been raised from the dead into God's way of doing things. So you give into stuff and it becomes your master. That's what Romans 6 basically tells us. It's a biblical principle here. And so the question is, what do we want to be our master? Or who do we want to be our master? Psychologists teach us this, that the more times that we say yes to good things and no to bad things, we cut new neural pathways in our mind. You might remember the teaching of Dr. Caroline Leaf a few years ago in relation to these things. And I think that's really good. Darren Hardy says, the compound effect, the principle of reaping huge rewards from a series of small, smart choices. The steps don't seem to be significant, but they are. They offer no immediate result or big win, so why bother? So many stop. They quit after the 8th day of exercise to lose weight. They stop mastering the piano, and after a few months, because they can only play chopsticks. That's probably something that will challenge us today, because that's possibly all that we can play and the piano. And so he's speaking about the need to do things and the compound effect. John Maxwell and the 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth has a whole chapter on consistency. He says, the successful person has the habit of doing the things that failures don't like to do. The successful person doesn't like doing them either, but his dislike is subordinated to the strength of his purpose. I love that. And master the basics, then practice them every day without fail. Small disciplines repeated with consistency every day lead to great achievements slowly off after time. And so they've already made decisions. When God called him to go to Russia and evangelize, he says, I didn't go to Russia to learn to evangelize. He says, I went to Russia because I was already learning to evangelize, prepared to evangelize, and then God sent me to Russia. And I think there's a great principle here. We build a life of significance. We build a testimony. We build character by taking the good daily decisions, the godly daily decisions that God wants us to take. And finally, while we're being asked to bow today, that's a question. Where are we being asked to bow today? Will we stay standing and strong because of our beliefs? I'll get the band to come now. You know, can we purpose ahead of time? Can I, Michael Rollo, purpose ahead of time like these guys did, that when the rubber hits the road, I'm not going to bow? Can we purpose that? You know, in what kind of areas? The areas of sex. Will I sleep with my boyfriend or girlfriend outside of marriage, or will I follow the biblical teaching on purity? What about if I'm tempted with pornography? Will I flick the channels? Will I sit down in a quiet moment? Will I look at soft porn? Will I hope that someone's going to come up in a program is going to feed that for me? What about the gods of materialism? Will I live from envy? Will I bow to the gods of materialism? What's going to be first in my life? Is it going to be overtime, or am I going to serve God with my time? What am I going to sow into my kids? What kind of example am I going to give to my kids? What kind of groove am I cutting in my life? Will I sell my soul to the gods of compromise? Will I go with the flow? Will I become involved in gossip, slander, backbiting, deceit, excess pleasure? That's just good stuff, isn't it? You're loving it now. It was good to start with. More of a challenge now, eh? More of a challenge. You know, will I bow to money, sex, power, and pride? Will I bow to the false gods of insecurity? We've already heard this morning about security. Will I give in to fear? I remember going for a job interview. And I'd been so challenged in the job that I was in. As a guy phoned me up and about something, and then he asked me a job if I wanted a job. And then he phoned me again, asked me if I wanted a job, and I said, I'll go for an interview. And when I went for an interview, I remember saying to him, will I be asked to do ABC if I go to work for you? And he said, no, it'll all be good. And then I went to work for this firm, and when I went there, The assistant manager came down and he told me about something that was illegal. And he said, and if the inspectors come in to find out about this, this is what I want you to show them. I tell you, I'd already purposed in my heart. Already purposed them. I'm not going down that road. If the inspectors come in, I'm not going to compromise what I believe and who I believe in for these things. I've already purposed in my heart. And this is full of Bible stuff. Ephesians says, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths. It tells us. The Bible's full of it, about preparation. In your heart, set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everything. Like there's something in today's society that's pushing us down the road, but there's something in God, and God's doing some phenomenal things. You know, Glenn Barrett said at the opening of Fraserburgh yesterday, there's 10 times more Assemblies of God churches in the world than McDonald's restaurants. I bet you didn't know that. And amazing. And he was saying how many are not McDonald's restaurants, but how many AOG churches are birthed every day. God is doing something phenomenal. We were at the opening of Fraserburgh last night. There was 950 people at that meeting last night. We were there. Diane and I were there, experiencing like something phenomenal that's going on. And there are people there. Glenn Barrett was there just the other week at our audacious church. They had 404 people make decisions over four services at Easter. See, God is doing something. He's touching people's hearts in our nation. I was asking John yesterday about what's going on in Shetland. Prayer meeting packed. People being drawn into the prayer meeting. Like lots of people. Young people getting saved. Baptisms in the sea. Like, it's happening in different places. Down in Norwich the other week, 80 people baptized on Easter Sunday. 70-something people baptized the next week, and a queue of 15 people waiting to be. Like, this is happening today. God is doing stuff today. And it's going to take us to stand up for Jesus today. The old hymn says, stand up for Jesus. And that's what these guys did. Well, my time is gone. You know, that. How many of you watch films that you've heard the phrase locked and loaded? Well, just me and Stephen. Like, that's where we're back. There's a few of us, right? We know it's about having your gun ready, right? Locked and loaded. It means being ready, okay? So this is today, purposed and prepared. That's the message today. Like, purposed. Like, what am I going to purpose in my heart? What's God going to do? You know, when Nelson Mandela was in prison, he in history, he said, I'm prepared to die. He's prepared to die for what he believed. And Jesus died for us. We need to be able to live for him. We need to live for him day by day by day. These guys living away from home made a fantastic decision. We will not bow. We will not bow. And I'm sure Stephen will expand more of that next week. And then possibly the week after, we'll be looking what God does for people. How he comes through for people who do not bow. Because he's a mighty miracle working God. And we'll look forward to looking at. So can I encourage you, take a stand now so that you won't bow when the heat is on. Make good God decisions. May God prepare us to live for him in these challenging times. And listen, we all fail. We've all messed up at some point or other. But maybe this morning, God has just challenged you about something, and you want to get your life back in order with God today. And this is your opportunity.
Thank you for listening. We hope you've been challenged and inspired. Please feel free to contact us through our website, foundchurch.co.uk, or you can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.